Bantam Audio Publishing presents Iacocca, his life, his times, in his words.
I don't know what year I decided I wanted to play leader and be ahead of everybody. Maybe it burns within you, and before you know it, you're caught up in it. And I think it really boils down to, you happen to get into a racket or a business that you really like. And I like it. I just love it. And you know what it boils down to? You get enthusiastic, and it shows.
Today I'm here to tell you that we are going to pay off the last $800 million in government-guaranteed loans, taking the outstanding debt down to zero.
Lee Iacocca at his moment of triumph. His whole life a story of victory over adversity. He's an American legend, the tough-talking, straight-shooting businessman who, as the father of the Mustang, made over $1 billion for the Ford Motor Company. Fired at the peak of his career, Lee Iacocca went on to bring a dying Chrysler back from the brink of bankruptcy. His appeal was to an entire nation.
There's something about Americans who will identify with somebody who talks so honestly and says, "Give me a hand." Well, thank God there are enough of them, because it got us through the dark days.
Iacocca's best-selling Bantam autobiography has personally touched the lives of millions of readers. In it, he speaks for himself, candidly and openly, about an extraordinary life of struggle, survival, and triumph.
I guess you hit a nerve. People identify with adversity. They don't want to identify with you made a lot of money, or you're successful, or you can have lunch or dinner with the president. They don't want to talk about that. They want to talk about their problems as seen through your eyes, so they parallel. So many of them say, "I work in a company where they didn't recognize my talents, and they fired me." And now you see almost a rebirth. So many people say, "The book told me one thing, hang in there, and you can come back. I had given up."
Lee Iacocca. There are those who call him a self-made man. Iacocca tells a different story. A story that begins at the turn of the century on a small island in New York Harbor within sight of the Statue of Liberty. Nicola Iacocca, Lee's father, passed through Ellis Island in 1902. Like so many immigrants, he was poor, alone, and scared, but he was also filled with a hope and a spirit that would forever inspire his only son.
He was an unusual person, a character in a way, but he was full of homilies and anecdotes. He had one for everything, to teach us. So instead of telling us we shouldn't indulge in the seven sins or be greedy, he'd always have a story on, "Let me tell you a story about greed," and then he'd give you this little anecdote. So I was fortunate, because you got these little indelible Dick and Jane pictures, I call them, that stuck with you all your life. He wasn't too complicated, see? I mean, he was a big influence in my life. My mother was, too, but not like my father. He had that, I think that's in your genes, he had a real deep love of life. I mean, he laughed every day. He always thought that, as I said in the book, the sun would come out tomorrow, and it usually does, by the way. When you're in an adverse time of your life, whether it's, as I said, death in the family, losing your job, everybody's going to suffer some of that in their lives, and it's how you handle that, and I learned a lot from him. You say, it's going to pass. I mean, what are you going to do? Go out and shoot yourself, you know? So that's instilled in your life by someone.
Nicola Iacocca moved to Allentown, Pennsylvania, where, for this young immigrant with a growing family, the 20s really did roar. They roared, and then collapsed.
He had done so well in the roaring 20s that he had got pretty wealthy. He was in real estate. He was in a lot of businesses, a great entrepreneur, and he thought there'd be no end. It reminds me of what's going on today, you know, just keep borrowing and borrowing and... And he borrowed so much that when the first payments came due on one mortgage, he used to say, I second mortgaged everything, you know. And I extended my credit, and I knew I didn't know how high up was. But when it collapsed, I didn't even put aside for the family or kids. Maybe I should have kept one property clear. What an idiot. So he had, it was tough times, and of course I think that story could be repeated by a million other people. It wasn't novel.
But these were Iacocca's formative years. The lessons learned in Allentown, Pennsylvania, were to remain with him all his life.
I was about just entering school at the time, so I remember my adolescent years of 6 to 15 vividly, because that was the great roaring 30s, which didn't roar too much. They were tough times. And I think you find anybody of that generation is sort of a victim of those times. Your attitudes are different. You tend to be conservative in financial matters, that you better watch your step. It could happen again. And I've always been that way. Fiscally, I'm very conservative. I don't believe in letting, as I said in the book, the girls use the credit cards promiscuously. Not because I can't afford it or I'm cheap. I want to teach them in their minds some discipline, that you can't just go on sprees and say, well, it comes from someplace, and I sign my name, and somebody picks up the tab. The analogy being, that's what our government does today, by the way. Somebody will pick up the tab someday, so they keep spending $17, $18 billion a month more than they take in, which to me is a tragedy. But that goes back to the Depression. I think that way.
Understand the child, and you understand the man. As Iacocca was later to write, bad times are indelible. They stay with you forever. Almost everyone in Allentown was Pennsylvania Dutch. A kid took a lot of abuse for being just a little bit different. That, too, was to stay with him.
I was a victim of where I was born and raised, and it wasn't all that bad, but you were different. You were the minority. And like any majority, since it was almost homogeneous in that there were, I don't know what the population was at that time, maybe 90%, one group of people, they tended to be intolerant of anybody who didn't eat like them, dress like them, talk like them. And I didn't want to talk like them, I used to say, because I couldn't understand them. Their English was so poor in that part of the world, but that's beside the point. We were different. Little by little, you wondered what made you different. You know, you did the same things they did, and you went to school, and you all tried to excel, and you breathed the same air, and, you know, you went to the same football games, and I said, what makes me so different? But that was a difficult decade, 30s to 40s. I think after World War II, most of that got wiped out. I mean, most of it, not all of it, but we still have plenty of problems. But it seemed to turn. But it happened to hit me when I was impressionistic. I was growing up then. That's when I was going to learn all about life, and I didn't like the part I was learning.
And then at the age of 15, rheumatic fever, in a time before antibiotics, a major killer. The cure? Rest and more rest. And for the once active and healthy teenager, a whole new set of interests.
I turned to books, I guess, all kinds of books. And there's adversity, too. I was forced into it. I don't think I'd have read as much, voracious appetite for reading. And I developed that. I don't think I'd have done that if I could have continued to play a musical instrument or could have played baseball, which I loved. I'd have cut all that stuff out. So there again, you say, how did that happen? I don't know. You say, I can't do this, so I better... You could vegetate and sit there, and pretty soon you end up sulking the rest of your life. But I had no alternative, and I didn't want to just sit around and lie in bed or sit in a chair, so that's the way I started. Those 2 years right after my sickness, I think I started to develop a lot of things, my study habits, my wanting to do well. I was no longer happy with C's or B's. I wanted A's, you know.
It wasn't long before Iacocca wanted to get A's in everything. While he was sick, Iacocca developed a new passion, poker, a game he really loved and usually won. He's been a gambler all his life. With his same competitive spirit, Iacocca entered Lehigh University and got his degree in a grueling 8 straight semesters.
Lehigh was a tough engineering school. It's a real tough military-type school. And there, you look back and say, well, you're lucky there. It was no liberal arts. I'm not suggesting that liberal arts guys don't have to work hard, but with no fooling around. You either knew how to design your machine or your bridge, or they would tell you the bridge is going to fall down in civil engineering, you know, when you had those courses. So it was pretty demanding and rigorous, and I liked it.
Iacocca's father never let him have a two-wheel bike. He thought it was too dangerous. But before he was out of college, Lee was driving a car, a beat-up 60-horsepower 1938 Ford. Iacocca now claims that it was this car that made him want to work for Ford. Those guys need me, he joked with his friends. Anybody who builds a car this bad...
Sample complete. Ready to continue?